Welcome to the TWIML AI Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Charrington. Before we get to today's episode, I'd like to send a huge thank you to our friends at Qualcomm for their support of the podcast and their sponsorship of this series. Qualcomm AI Research is dedicated to advancing AI to make its core capabilities, perception, reasoning, and action, ubiquitous across devices. Their work makes it possible for billions of users around the world to have AI-enhanced experiences on Qualcomm Technologies-powered devices. To learn more about what Qualcomm is up to on the research front, visit twimlai.com/Qualcomm, Qualcomm. And now, on to the show. All right, everyone, I am here with Julian Quiroga. Julian is computer vision team lead at Genius Sports. Julian, welcome to the TWIML AI podcast.
Hi, Sam.
Hey, it's great to have you on the show, and I'm looking forward to digging into your paper, which you'll be presenting at CVPR in the Computer Vision in Sports workshop. But before we do, I would love to have you share a little bit about your background and how you came to work in computer vision.
Yeah, sure. Right now, I'm the computer vision team lead at Genius Sports. Yeah, I'm responsible for leading applied research in video understanding and videography. I work together with a team of scientists and engineers trying to get the best technologies for the company. Before joining Genius Sports, I was an associate professor in a university in Bogota doing research in signal processing, image processing, and computer vision. But I was contacted by the company, and they offered me to join them for a very exciting kind of products with basketball. And since I played basketball since I was like 10 years old, so it was so exciting, and I accepted the offer. I did a PhD in informatics and mathematics in France. Yeah, but before that, I was working more in signal processing and all the theoretical aspects. But then I started to work with images and video, and that's what I'm doing right now.
All right, cool. And tell us a little bit about Genius Sports and some of the things that you do with computer vision at the company.
Yeah, sure. So Genius Sports is a leading company in sports data and sports media and all the regulated sports betting sectors, and is specialized in the capture and distribution of real-time data. In particular, in my case, we are doing more of applied research, trying to do like video understanding and videography to get automatic production and to collect data in real time. This data will enrich the kind of data that we provide to our partners. Some of the projects that they're working right now, they are related with automatic production with single and multiple views. Yeah. And also the collection of data in the edge, really close to the event, to the sport event, for instance, basketball and volleyball, and in a really short period of time.
How much of what the company does is focused on or related to vision data versus other types of data sources?
Yeah, so actually we started like 2 years ago, I think, when I joined the company. Yeah, okay. So we are really new in comparison with other.
I guess you mentioned some of the broad things that you're doing there, but you mentioned that your focus is like applied research. Yeah, what are some of the projects that you're focused on?
Yeah, so the first one is automatic production. It can sound like, what is that? But it depends. And also the complexity, it depends. So for the case of the paper it's a single camera that's able to observe the full court or field. So the idea is just to generate a virtual camera, but there are other scenarios when you have more than one camera in order to produce a higher quality production, every switching and doing some transition between cameras. So in the simple scenario when you only have one camera, the idea is just to get the proper frame and to track the main actions, yeah, in real time, of course. But when you have more than one camera, you have to bring to the spectators like a better experience of the event and trying to select the proper point of view for each action. So the problem is more challenging.
Mm-hmm. And so the paper that you're presenting at CVPR, is that a single camera only, or does it include multiple camera scenarios?
Yeah, so this paper is for basketball and is with a single view. And the main goal is to produce a high-quality production that is really fast. Because for sports events, the latency of this broadcast is quite important. So if you want to do any processing of this video, you don't want to add like a large latency. So actually in our work, we are able to just add like 300 or 400 milliseconds. Yeah, for HD. So this is really important. But however, there are other components in the streaming procedure that they are adding more time. So the idea of this technology is to be able to produce this high quality production without adding like a large latency to the full pipeline in order to get this broadcast to the spectators.
Okay. And if folks are listening and would like to take a look at the demonstration of the project, we've got that. We'll have that in the show notes. It's up on YouTube and it's pretty cool. You start out with this kind of wide frame view of a basketball court and you show by adding additional layers of information that you can localize the ball and localize the players and know which part of the court the action is going to be on and kind of pan the camera back and forth and zoom in and zoom out. The end result is as you've described and as the paper is titled, kind of an automated production where presumably you can just kind of point this camera that's connected to a model at a basketball court and it'll produce something that's kind of watchable and engaging and interesting as opposed to just the one zoomed out view. When we're talking about sports production today, like I would imagine you've got a pretty broad range of what's actually done. Like you've got, you know, maybe at high schools or maybe even some colleges, you know, a single video that's without an operator that's just recording. And then, you know, certainly in the professional sports, you probably have teams of people creating a production. Is the goal here to produce something that is kind of productized and replaces one or more of those scenarios?
Yeah, so one of the ideas with this project is to enable some people and college and schools that they are not able to have like a professional cameraman or something like that, yeah, to be able to record their games, yeah, but not only to record the games, but also to record and to stream them to wherever point, yeah. Mm-hmm. Through the internet, yeah. So, you know, parents, family, friends, our fans can watch the game of their favorite team, yeah, without an expensive system of capture and production and streaming. Yeah, this is one part. The other part is that we are able to do the auto production, yeah, with the scene, as you mentioned, with the wide view. We have the full information, and at the same time, later, we are also working on that, we can capture at the same time data, more data, locations, and analytics, and also embed that in the same broadcast, yeah, and also with low latency.
And so is the setup that you've got a single high-resolution camera and the panning and zooming is all done digitally, or are you actually controlling a camera?
Exactly. So actually, it's a fixed camera. It depends of the on the field, yeah, and the distance. It should be a wide angle, ultra wide angle, or a standard camera. Now, if you have like a large venue, you can use whatever camera. But if not, you will need like a wide angle or ultra wide angle. Yeah. And then all the production is over a virtual camera. So it's just like a digital crop or digital zoom. Yeah. trying to get that. So there's an important trade-off here, is that you want to contain the main action inside this virtual camera, but it's really easy. I mean, if you are not doing any production, you are containing the main action. Yeah.
Right.
But you have to crop. Yeah. But you have to crop enough in order to get the attention of the spectator to the main action. So there is a trade-off that you don't want to lose any action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you want to contain the action. So it should be like large and small enough to contain properly that. And it depends on the kind of basketball there. So, I mean, imagine NBA, NCAA, something like that, or college basketball or kids or something like that. The speed of the game, that's going to be different. So you can incorporate that in order to have like a smooth enough production, but you don't want to lose any action.
And what resolution cameras have you worked with out of Kira?
Yeah. So our standard setup is a 4K camera.
Okay.
Yeah. And the resolution of the produced game, it depends. If you are doing streaming, perhaps not so high, but it could be like full HD or HD. If you are just recording, yeah, it can be full HD, yeah. It depends also on the internet connectivity, or if you only want to record. If you only want to record, it can be like full HD. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I mentioned in the demo, you roll through at the beginning a set of layers showing localizing the players and the ball and things like that. You actually show quite a bit of information overlaid onto the screen in the demo. What are the main contributions of the paper?
Yeah, so right now with deep learning, I think that we are pushing a lot, trying to get like end-to-end systems. Yeah. Instead of that, we wanted to have like a more modular system. Yeah, going to the basics of team sports. Like I'm trying to get like a bottom-up system. So in basketball, you have your ingredients. Yeah, you have your players, you have referees, and you have the ball,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. So we wanted to construct something based on that, and trying to get good solution for localizing the ball and players and refs in time. Yeah. And then trying to build really nice rules of production that can behave well depending on the different kind of basketball. Yeah. And that is a good thing, is that in the company, we are a lot of people that love basketball. So actually, we use it, all this knowledge and all this experience trying to get good rules of production that perhaps in this end-to-end approach is quite hard, because you're going to have a reference. Yeah. And you want to have this crop in order to fool this and that. But depending on the kind of basketball, it's not so intuitive and not so easy to include these kind of rules. But in our approach that is modular, yeah, you have your ingredients or your model or the locations of your actors, in this case, ball and players, and we take out the ref. And then, depending on that, we can, at every time, select the proper crop for the action. So what are the main contribution? First of all, is like a full pipeline. Yeah. That the more data you are getting of basketball games, the detector that you have for ball and player, they will work better. So you're gonna be always in the right position. And also it can easily be implemented in any field. Yeah. And it's not expensive, and it's working in real time.
Okay. So I think you packed a lot into that explanation. Well, one question that jumped out at me was, you mentioned that you start with these ingredients and identifying where the players are in the ball. And then you mentioned having rules to determine what the optimal crop and zoom are. Do you mean those rules literally, meaning that the deep learning is doing the detection and localizing the ingredients, and then you've got a set of static rules that are based on that information that do the production, or is the production also part of a learned model?
Yeah, so the learned model is, there are two main components that they are learned. One is the actors, ball and players, and the other one is what is the game state. Because depending on the state of the game, you want to follow one rule, or you want to do something, you want to be more attentive, or you want to be almost still, it depends. Yeah, but we are not trying to learn the proper virtual camera. Yeah, that was a choice that we did. Yeah, I remember that when discussing the different approaches that we could take, there are really similar configuration of players. Yeah, and depending on the ball, you want to frame that action in one way or in another. So you have to you have to be aware of where is the ball. Yeah, but not only the ball is directing where is the proper framing. And you have to be aware of the players and player distribution. Yeah, but not only this distribution will tell you what is the proper frame. And you need a combination of these two depending on the game state. And sometimes, I mean, in end-to-end approaches, yeah, if you want to state that like an end-to-end, you have all your ingredients or even your raw video, and then you want like an output, the proper framing. Yeah, and it's going to be like a black box. Mm-hmm. And trying to adjust that for one kind of basketball or one kind of thing, that's going to be quite hard. This is why we did this choice. And yeah, so it's quite easy to set one kind of behavior for one kind of basketball.
Okay, okay. Well, when you say one kind of basketball, what are examples of kinds of basketballs that would change the way you would frame
the shot? So, yeah, so there are some challenge when you want to produce basketball with really with a really nice zoom. Yeah, and just for instance, if you see the production that they are doing for NCAA or for NBA, it's quite different. Yeah, NCAA, usually they are just having like a almost still camera in the half court for half court possession. And then just they are just moving for the transition, and that's it. For the NBA, they really want to track and to do more zoom when they are during a half court. So this is like a two kind of production. But by kind of basketball, I'm talking about the maximum speed. So the main challenge when you are trying to do that is someone that is really fast, like LeBron James or something like that. Yeah, and you want to track the main action, but you don't want to disturb the people that are watching the production. Yeah. So you have a trade-off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you already know that your basketball is not going to be so fast, yeah, you can have like a maximum speed of the virtual camera and things like that, and be sure that you're going to be able to track the main action. But if your basketball is quite fast and you don't want to lose the main action, so you have to relax somehow your roles in order to always be in the right position.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the modular approach, it sounds like it allows you to, it gives you a little bit more kind of knobs for addressing these different characteristics of games in terms of faster and slower. And also it sounds a little bit like it will allow maybe in more of a professional setting, if this is deployed, the whoever's using it to kind of tune in a personality for the way they want the video to kind of feel. You know, NCAA versus NBA, for example.
Yeah, yeah. And even for the case of NCAA, between men and women, it's totally different. Usually for women, the point guard is really close to the half court with the ball. So if you want to take a look at the point guard and also the action that is taking place under the basket, you need a wider framing. But for men, it's totally different. They are moving different. So there are something that, I mean, we are not trained to learn that, but it's also possible to learn that and to avoid feeding that by hand or by the satisfaction of customer that is usually what we are doing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some customer, they prefer this kind of production than other, but it's quite easy to transfer that in our models. Yeah. That is not so easy for our end-to-end system, that you have to change your last function or your data or whatever else.
And retrain.
You
also overlay this graph of Gaussian based actionness in the video, and it seems to try to capture where the action is or is likely to be on the court. Can you talk a little bit more about that that metric and what goes into it?
Yeah, sure. So the first thing is that we are modeling players like two-dimensional Gaussians in the court. That is quite intuitive. Yeah. So since we have like a core model, it's quite easy to have like shapes with the proper sizing pixels in the image. Yeah. and also to map that to a 2D histogram. So we are able to model the distribution of players. And our hypothesis is that if players are more concentrated in a given area of the court, it's more likely to have like more action there or something interesting that will happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Imagine that half of players, they are in one half court or the other half is in the other half court. So surely they are in a timeout or something like that. Yeah, and it's quite hard to decide where I should look, or perhaps I should do a zoom out. Yeah, yeah, something like that. So this is one thing. The other thing that you can easily think is, okay, if you have the ball, you only need the ball, right? And you can track the ball like in soccer or something similar, or in volleyball, I don't know. Yeah. And yeah, but there are a lot of interesting things that you also want to see. You not only want to see someone with the ball like that and everyone in the key area taking screens and doing a lot of things and trying to get free for a shot. So it's quite interesting. So this function is trying to describe this likelihood. Yeah. But alone, it's not so useful because we know that we want to have this ball. So what we are doing, we are taking each player and modeling this player as a 2D Gaussian, and then we get this actionist function that is a mixture of a Gaussian. Yeah, and depending on the complexity of the production that you want to do, you can take this distribution and take the optimal framing. I mean, you can also compute the amount of zoom to cover a lot of players or not. But in the paper and the video that we shared, this simplification, we are just projecting this to the mixture of Gaussian to 1D. Yeah. And we have like a 1D function, and we just want to take the peak of this function as the center of the action. And then we just center the virtual camera in at this value. And then with the ball, we take a look if the ball is inside or not. However, in basketball with a single view, it's very likely that the ball is going to be not visible or hard to detect because someone is taking the ball or hiding the ball or doing something, and you don't want the system to be lost in this situation. So this actionist function is more stable, yeah, and the peak is not moving so fast because it's not possible that one player that is here is going to be here in the next frame. Yeah, so it's going to be this kind of smoothness, and we want to track this peak to get this like a good center for the virtual camera.
Okay, cool. So the actor localization, that I'm imagining is a supervised learning problem. You've got video, you've got, you know, someone's labeled your players with bounding boxes, and you just train a model to recognize the players. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a classical deep learning approach. Yeah, we have some examples of ball, some examples of referees, and some examples of players. The class referee is not too easy for NCAA. The referees, they are always dressing the same, but it depends on the kind of basketball. Yeah, we want to take the players out. Yeah, or at least to be aware of referees. Sorry, but it's totally supervised. And the precision and recall of the detector, it depends. In our case, we use a Jolo version 3. Yeah, now it's available Jolo version 4. And 2 days ago, like your Jolo version 5.
But there's some controversy over whether it's real yellow or something
else. Yeah. And yeah, so the nice thing of this approach is the better the when a better detector and a faster is available, we can just plug here, yeah, okay, and be more confident on the detection of our actors, yeah. And also we are using our core model in order to do not train over the raw image, but we transform the image according to the core model. So we ensure that the network is only observing the area of the court, yeah. And there are some proportion when we are doing this transformation that make the job easier for the detector. So this is why even under large overlap, we are able to detect players with a really good accuracy.
So elaborate on that a little bit more. It sounds like you're saying you have YOLO as the detector, and that's operating on still frames, correct?
Yep.
And you've also got this model for the court that you know, the angle of your camera. I'm assuming we're talking about like the 3D model of the court and like the 2D, 3D projections and that kind of thing. Is that what you're referring to
with the court? Yeah. So, yeah. So since the camera is fixed, we localize the court, or mm-hmm. I mean, we localize the camera. You can see one side or the other, but it's equivalent. So we can compute actually a court volume. So like the projection of a court of a volume of interest, imagine like a 4-meter high, 5-meter high volume in the image. So we can take this region, yeah, and actually to crop and transform that and feed the network when we are training, yeah. And this will ensure that the variance of the sizes for the object that's going to be not so high and can be more specialized in order to detect the players, because it's not expecting whatever size of players and things like that, yeah.
So how tightly cropped around a player is the image that you're feeding to the detector? Is it very tightly cropped, or is it, you know, half court or something like that?
No, is the full court, yeah. But okay. Imagine that we are taking out everything that is not the court and just taking like a crop that exactly contains all the pixels of this volume. And the players there, they are going to look similar in shape. I mean, it's not likely to have like a player in this transformation that's going to be the double or three times the size of others. So the number of anchors for YOLO, it's going to be a smaller number. Yeah.
Okay. And so you mentioned earlier that part of the contribution of this paper is being able to, at least what I took as being able to do this kind of actor detection and localization in a short time frame. Can you elaborate a little bit more on if you've got the out of the box detector, what pieces are you doing on top of that?
Yeah, so then that when we have all these detection of actors, they depend a lot on YOLO version 3. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's going to be faster when a new detector or faster. So actually, we did like some changes in YOLO. Usually, YOLO is not so good for small objects, but in basketball, there is one small object that is really important. That is the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, there is like a map that is composing different layers. We modify one layer in order to take the layer 11. That is able to get some interesting feature of small objects till 14 times 14 size, yeah, and this enables us to detect the ball in a more consistent way. So starting with these detections, then we use our core model again to localize the players in the court plane and to create this actions function, yeah, but then. Or also we get a 2D histograms that is trying to estimate what is the state of the game. Yeah, if it is a half court or timeout or a transition or something like that, in order to switch for the proper role of the production. And yeah.
Is that based solely on player position? Game state?
Yeah. So for this paper, yeah. But of course, you want to also add the temporal information, yeah, because you can have like a distribution of players for different situations, yeah. But the story, history is very important, yeah.
I'd imagine like right after a basket, if the ball is being inbounded, you're going to want to be zoomed out because you know the ball is going to end up on the other side of the court quickly or something like that. Like there's incorporating in the knowledge about not just where the players are and where the ball is, but like what's actually happening from a semantic perspective could be an interesting signal.
Yeah. So actually right now we are trying to move forward with this. We're including more things. Okay. At the beginning, we really want to have like a live but accurate enough method for production without trying to get all these components and trying to have like something, because we really want to be really fast. Yeah, and trying to build on that. But then depending on the challenge, and there are some challenges that the system is failing, sometimes you don't want to lose a small part of the transition, or you are trying to follow someone that is going with the ball and you arrive a bit late Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, sometimes it's happening. Yeah. But they are really small cases. Yeah. So it's light because it's combining all these ingredients. Yeah. The action head, the game state. And then there is a controller that is really simple. And depending on the state, it's deciding something. Yeah. And producing a really high quality. And however, there are something that I really like to have, like trying to have more zoom and a variety of zooms, framings during the half court possession, trying to be more like tracking the action. Yeah. But it needs more awareness. The system really needs to understand more states inside the half court state, for instance, like a screen in the key area, or someone is preparing for taking a three pointer or something like that. Yeah. So our idea is to increase the number of states. Yeah. Because this number of states will increase the number of rules of production that we can have.
Okay. And are the rules for your controller, are those handcrafted or are those learned as well?
Yeah. So we have this core volume. Yeah.
Yep.
So imagine that would you want to have like a zoom out. It's quite easy. You already know your core volume and you can find like the optimal framing that contain this core volume, the full core volume, and is well centered. Yeah. But then we also have another framing. For instance, the left half core framing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the right half-core framing, but also you can have a lot of set of framings, or you can have a continuous. Yeah, in our case, we have a discrete set of framings inside each half-court, and depending of the peak of the action is, we are just moving to the proper framing inside the half-court. Yeah, this is like a easy solution for the problem, but you can also have like a continuous. But I will be honest, with this discrete set of framings, the quality is really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the solution, it will be better with a continuous set of framings, things like that.
Yeah. And to be clear, when you have a discrete set of framings, but the virtual camera is not jumping from one discrete place to another, it's a smooth transition from one to the next. So
exactly.
It looks pretty good.
And for doing that is quite easy. There's a proportional control when moving from this framing to the desired framing and trying to obey a maximum speed of the virtual camera because we don't want to perturb this rotator.
And so still with the, you've got this discrete set of views. Did you just write down the rules, you know, the correspondence between the game state and the framing, or did you try to learn that kind of way?
No. There are, so for the transition is just a free camera. Yeah. So it's a virtual
transition from one to another. I get that's just following PID or proportional.
Yeah. No. Sorry. So imagine that I think that the two main states of the game are transition when we are moving to one half court to the other, and the half court position. So we expect that they're going to remain there for 15, 20, 24 seconds, something like that. Yeah. For during a transition, the camera is like a free camera. Yeah. Trying to be smooth, but trying to contain the main action or the peak of the action is and the ball at the same time. And there is a trade-off there. But the ball, if it's visible, it should be contained. Yeah. Okay. And it's trying to do like a free camera. But in the half court, yeah, we know that we want to be in this half court. So we are moving to the set of discrete views or framings. Yeah. And we are choosing the framing that is more or that is closer to the peak of the action is. And if we were in a different framing, we are just doing a proportional motion to the next framing. Yep.
Got it.
And that's it.
And in the demo, that's a 2D projection, but the peak of the action is in 3D on your court model, right? Or you're also zooming in and out.
Yeah. So actually the peak of the action is in 2D. So because the domain of this function is the court plane. So, for instance, I don't know, inside the key, in the middle of the key, and something like that. Yeah. For a single camera, yeah, and if you don't want to do a lot of zoom during half court position and things like that, you can just project to 1D and to select like a panning motion of your virtual camera. Yeah, but if you really want to do like a full professional with zooming and zoom out and everything, you can exploit these actions in 2D and to be aware if the action is in the other corner of the half court and trying to be more close to the action and to exploit better the pixel that you want to broadcast.
Cool. And so you've suggested a few of the next steps here. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about, you know, where you go based on this, or have you, are there even other papers that you've already published beyond?
I cannot say a lot. Yeah. But one of our main efforts right now is trying to improve some things. The lighting of the venue sometimes is making things difficult. Yeah. And yeah, so imagine that that the ball is not detected for some reason. You have a lot of windows and you have a lot of change in illumination and shadows and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the ball is the ball detector is failing. Yeah. So you're gonna be, I mean, all your production is gonna be based in the actions function. Yeah. And mm-hmm. you don't have all your ingredients and we can fail. So we are trying to get more robust detector and to get more data. Yeah, because the ball detector is totally data driven. So we need the more data that we can have in order to teach the network to detect any ball in basketball. Yeah. And if we have the ball, the method is quite good. The other thing that we want to do is to optimize some things. Of course, in order to run Jodo, you need a GPU, yeah? And this kind of GPU or server that you are using will determine your inference time, yeah? So if you want to be fast enough, you need a good server, but perhaps you want to do that locally in the edge,
yeah?
And it's not so easy to afford this kind of server for a public school or for a college or something like that, yeah? So if we can get a better detector that can run really fast in CPU or a very cheap GPU or something like that, we are trying to move that and to get like lighter detector that they are doing a good job. But if you have a good server or a good internet and you can just stream to the cloud and we process in the cloud, we are good enough. So right now we are trying to get like a more optimized version and trying to run with our detector and to try to correct some errors and some things that they are not so likely, but even if it's happening one time in a game or two times, people they are not so happy. Yeah. So mm-hmm. the idea is to be almost perfect. But yeah. At the same time, we want to include more cameras. Yeah. And trying to switch also like not expensive cameras. Yeah. But trying to switch among these cameras. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, since we are already aware of the location of players, at the same time without the production, we are collecting or we can collect some statistics that they are going to be really useful, yeah, for players, for the coach, for fans, for everyone, yeah, in real time or after the game. It depends because the necessities are different. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And have you already tried using this method with other sports? You've mentioned soccer a couple of times. How generalizable, how easily generalized is it to, you know, similar but different sports?
Yeah, our belief is it should work. I mean, the first modules, I mean, the actors and something like the core model or field model for soccer and things like that. But the rules of production, if you're watching soccer or volleyball, they're going to be different. This is the really nice part, yeah, because mm-hmm. you don't have to change all your model. Yeah, you have your knowledge here or the knowledge of the location of your actors, but then you can incorporate other kind of knowledge in a later stage, like how you should produce soccer for one camera or for two or for 20 cameras or volleyball or any other sport. But the main ingredients, yeah, they are going to be the same. Yeah, but yeah, we are trained that in other sports, yeah.
So you're already starting to look at that?
Yeah, sure.
Any other thoughts on future directions for this, or, you know, other things that you're excited about it, kind of this intersection of computer vision and sports?
Yeah. Actually, I think that the ideal system is going to be, it will be like a system able to do this automatic production, but at the same time, providing these statistics and analytics for any kind of user. So for the players and coach in real time saying, okay, these are some statistics and even some analytics, like, but really with low latency and all the same package and with a single camera, something like that, you install and you get, and you have the full package. Actually, we are aiming that at this part. So you can have that, you can have your auto production, you can have all the data that you want, with the same system, and with low latency. This is the goal.
Well, Julian, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me about what you're up to.
Okay, thank you, Sam, for the invitation, and see you later.
All righty, thank you.
All right, everyone, that's our show for today. For more information on today's show, visit twimmelai.com/shows. As always, thanks so much for listening and catch you next time.